Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, June 24th, 2019, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. I almost got through this intro okay, and then I fell asleep. It's Monday morning. I have no energy.
In the middle of
Waypoint Radio, episode 243. I'm Austin Walker, your host, joining me, Kato, right in front of me in the booth.
Ooh.
And calling in, Rob Zachney. How you doing, Rob? You took a little vacation. You took a little E3 break. You're back from it. How are you feeling?
Feeling pretty good. A little bit home. It's a strange thing. I lived in LA for a little bit, and I've got this weird thing now where I've lived in enough places that I'm always a little bit homesick for wildly disparate times of life and experiences. And so it's this weird thing where, like, I love the Northeast, and when I'm not in the Northeast, I miss it. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, I took in a Cubs game. That made me miss Chicagoland. So, you know, it's lazy summer, but I'm sort of perpetually always thinking, like, damn, I'll bet it's beautiful in Chicago right now,
right.
Or it's beautiful in LA. Well, I know for a fact it's beautiful in LA right now.
It was beautiful in LA. Yeah, absolutely. That was my favorite part of our E3 trip, was like the first few days of just like the conferences. It was busy. We were up way too late, like exhausted, but like getting a nice cup of coffee at Intelligentsia, or walking through that market and like looking at fruit and just like hanging around beautiful parts of LA was nice. God, I'm still not over the Taiwanese meal that we got.
Oh my God, that place was amazing.
Oh, it was so good. Shout outs to Pine and Crane.
Yeah.
In Silver Lake. It's not an ad. It was just good. So shout outs to them.
It was the great. They were the greatest dumplings I've ever had.
They were incredible.
Like, not usually my favorite thing.
Yeah.
And then
incredible.
Yeah.
We should talk about video games instead of Taiwanese food, but.
But it was so good.
It was really good. Welcome to our new podcast.
Hey, wait, real quick. I want to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
Huh.
Whose fault was it that cleaners showed up, like, just as I got out of the shower on the last day in LA? On the last day in the Airbnb?
I mean, when did they arrive?
10.
Okay, it was their fault then, because the email said 11.
Okay, but the last thing you told me before you left was, oh yeah, don't worry about anything till noon.
Yeah, so that also is a mistake, but, you know, they
so
still should have been.
You made a doubt, you both, it's like broken on both sides.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
But it was fine, right?
Oh yeah. nothing at all awkward about like being in pajamas like in the middle of breakfast and trying to explain to a group of women who have a tough job and a busy schedule to keep why you can't leave right now.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And like that kitchen was not ready for prime time. Like there
you
were things that needed to be disposed of.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah,
you gotta do your cleaners a solid by making sure that the stuff that like is really on you to get rid of is taken care of. They were very kind. They were just like, take your time, pack your stuff. Don't worry about the kitchen. It's easier if we handle it. You just pack and take care of yourself, which was very cool.
Aww, that's nice.
But I did feel enormously guilty at just the absolutely like demolished kitchen I left them.
Well, we got out of there alive. We've been back for a week. Rob.
Has it been a week?
Yeah,
What is time?
We didn't come into the office on Monday last week.
Right.
We took Monday as a comp.
Right.
But now we're back, and you can hear it in my voice. I have all the energy in the world, which is why I played so many video games this weekend.
Yeah.
I didn't play. That's not true. I started Judgment, but I only played through the parts of Judgment that I'd already played through during a preview build.
Is that out?
Yeah, it's out.
Why can't I buy it?
I don't know. Well, how's your bank account looking?
No, I went to the fucking PS4 store. Maybe this is... I don't know what the fuck is going on. Maybe this is just because I kept trying to do it on mobile.
Maybe I'm wrong.
The game's
out.
It says out. It says it's out.
On Friday.
I put it in my cart.
Yeah.
I go to checkout. Yeah. And it says pre-order for the 25th. I think PSN store was just fucking with me.
I think it's fucking with you.
And I don't know if maybe that is something that will get fixed.
Am I wrong?
I thought it was out too. I could have sworn it was out.
I'm going to hit add to cart.
Yeah. Go to checkout. You got to go to checkout. At checkout, it was like...
cart. I mean, this just says buy it.
Right, but go to checkout.
This product is currently available for pre-order only.
Yeah.
Huh.
What is...
Maybe we're wrong. Maybe this game... We're supposed to be professionals, Kato. But
yeah, that's what I thought. It says the 25th, but I could have sworn it came out like... Do people have... Like, discs are fine, but maybe digital's delayed because they already set the date or something?
Maybe. I don't know. I have a review code, so that's how I was playing it, obviously. They thought they sent us a review code early, and they didn't. I emailed them, and I was like, yo, this game is coming out.
Hello,
like,
yeah.
And they were like, oh, shit, we thought we got you them first. Like, you did not. Shout outs. Whatever. They remedied it immediately.
Yeah, that's
E3 season. This is why, like, fair. It's hard to launch a game around E3 season because you have a million other emails to send.
Yeah.
I'm only just starting it. I have nothing new to say about it because it's the stuff that it's everything I already said when I did the preview earlier last year or this year, whenever that was. Literally still that same section of the game. So I have nothing new to say there. I'm excited to see all of Dia's photos. That's a thing.
Yeah,
that's a thing I'm excited about. But other than that, this has been a very tabletop role-playing game-centric weekend for me. And y'all don't need me to talk about Dungeon World. You know I think Dungeon World's a good fucking game. So we can move. People should play Dungeon World. People who want to like get into... I think Dungeon World is a great first tabletop role-playing game. That is what I'm going to say. And if you're really curious, you can go watch us play Dungeon World. Well, you see me play Dungeon World from the Waypoint launch. It was me, Danica, Patrick, Danielle playing with Adam Coble. Yeah. So it was
fun. It's a fucking good stream.
It's a good stream. So go check that out. What have y'all been up to, though? I'm sure you have gotten up to some fucking video games. I look at you two and I go, those are a couple of gamers right there.
Great. Well, yeah, actually, I'm wearing my Monster Hunter shirt
that I got
from Uniqlo. I played some of that beta.
The Monster Hunter Iceborne beta.
Yeah. It was really fun, and there was a lot more change than I thought.
What is the deal with that beta?
Basically, it's three quests that you can go on. One of them is if you played the original game, the Great Jagras, which is that small, the yellow one that's kind of smaller eat another one and get all its belly all full. So that one's in there, and that's mostly just like try out some of the new like stuff. Like, so get your mind wrapped around, like, there's new moves on certain weapons.
Okay.
They have like new combos or like different modes. For like example, I use the charge blade a lot.
Yeah.
There's a new axe mode where the head of the axe spins and does a bunch of extra damage. So like, it's like charge the shield, which becomes the axe head, but instead of just going into that mode and dealing extra damage, there's a third form where, like, the axe head spins a bunch, and then...
Well, this is the charge blade, not the switch axe.
Yeah, charge blade. Okay. So, like, once you've got the blade, once you've charged the shield, you've charged your files, and then usually it would be go into axe mode to, like, do the big, giant, like, the super amped whatever attack that drains all your files. There's like one extra step in between where you put it into axe. I forget what it's called. I think it was like axe rage mode or something like that.
Sure.
Where the head of the axe is also spinning on top of that, and then you do your giant like huge attack.
That sounds
like
fantastic.
A new form that does extra damage for a limited amount of time.
Cool.
But there's things like that. So like the Jagras quest is in there, 20 minutes to kill that. And then the other two quests are set in the new space, which I've already forgotten the name of, but it's the new snow place, a large snow area, where even just being there means you have to be drinking hot drinks.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah.
Otherwise, what, you take damage over time?
No, it's your stamina drains faster.
Oh, interesting.
So, like, if you're running, you can't run for as long, or, like, when you're dodging and stuff, you'll not be able to do as many of those.
Uh-huh.
Unless you're, you've got the hot drink.
Like, buff on?
Buff.
How long does that last for? You drink one hot drink, how warm are you, how long are you warm?
I don't know what the exact number is, but it feels somewhere in the span of like 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
But if you die,
you have to re-hot drink,
which is a thing I did a lot on the second monster. So there's two monsters in that area that you can fight. One of them is, I forgot the name of that one, but it's like, it starts with a B or something, but it's like, imagine a T-Rex, but its face was a deer instead.
Uh-huh.
And had big old elk horns.
Yes. this was the one that was, they talk about this one in the interview with Patrick from last week.
Yeah. And that one was cool. It like interacted with the environment a lot.
Okay.
In where like it would dash through a bunch of trees and then like it would kind of scoop one of the trees and it'd make another dash at you with the tree trunk in its horns. Mm-hmm. So it's like, area of effect would be wider, so you'd have to, instead of like rolling out at the last second, you'd really have to kind of run out of its path,
right?
Or another thing it would do is like it would build up a giant ball of like rock and ice by like dragging its horns into the ground and then like
throw it at you,
smash it at awesome. Yeah, smash it on top of you, and it'll do like extra ice
damage. Do we know how many new monsters are going to be in that game?
I don't know how many new ones, but I saw like, I think this area has like three.
Okay.
In the beta, at least, I saw three. Like, one of them is that deer one. Another one is, like, if you remember the fishy one from the Wastelands.
Yeah.
There's one like that, but for snow. Cool. It, like, digs under the ground in the snow and pops up and stuff. And I fought that one while I was fighting the deer one.
Okay.
And then there's
classic Monster Hunter shit.
Yeah. And then there's the fucking T-Grex, which sucks and is the worst, and I hate it.
Why?
Because I could never.
What's a T-Rex?
It's a horrible dragon thing that runs at you on the ground real fast, and then it does a bunch of spin moves that can like almost one hit kill you.
Jeez.
And it's rough, to say the least. I was surprised.
Were you trying to solo it?
Well, yeah.
Well,
but
there's your problem.
No, because I soloed the other ones. It was fine.
Yeah, that's the end game of Happens in Monster Hunter.
I played that whole. I actually did see an amazing video. God, I should look up who this was. Someone, a team of four, did beat the T-Grex in 1:52.
See? I just got to get
like,
three friends.
Fucked up. That's all. But no, it was really cool. It was really fast. It felt akin to like the
Odogaron
kind of like the speed was like, but it's a little bigger than that.
Okay,
but it's still like, oh wow, this is moving faster than I think it should, and it's just like it's like clambering towards
cool,
slipping on the ice, but like still moving quickly. It's really cool. And very very difficult. I never beat it over the weekend.
Hey, how come all these reptiles are living out here in the ice and the snow?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I think they're technically dragons.
Okay. Are dragons warm-blooded?
No, they're just magic. So they're like,
yeah,
fuck
okay.
off.
You're an ice dragon. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, but this one's not an ice dragon. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at this Tigrex, and I'm like, that is even the color scheme looks like a desert dragon situation to me.
It doesn't feel like it should be there, but it is.
But it is.
And it does a couple of fun attacks. Like one of them is this. It just like slaps the ground in front of it, kind of, which causes ice to blow.
Yeah,
like, blow up, and then like that hurts.
Does it dizzy you or anything? Is it like, is it like dizzying you or blinding you?
No, it'll give you ice blight, which means
that sounds
it's not
terrible.
Good. Yeah, it's like being frozen.
That's
partially.
Like some New York in February shit. I gotta go. I got the ice blight.
Yeah,
I gotta get out of this fucking place.
But aside from new weapon moves and the new monsters, there's also a couple new things for just like the hunting portion, where one of them is this, you can ride a little monster now.
What?
So like, you know,
what do you mean you could ride a little monster?
You can ride a little monster now. You can get friends that are like cool. You know how you can get your Palico could ride a little monster sometimes?
Yes.
Yeah. Now I you guess. Can do that with those same monsters.
I don't remember what those monsters look like, Kato.
Well, they're like little they look like basically a little like a think of like a regular ass green lizard, but just bigger.
Like a big green lizard.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're yellow instead of green. But that type of lizard. In the ice world, they're kind of fox like, but with more hair.
This is you're describing a nonsense creature.
It's this is not it's a real like thing. What if it was like the like litheness of a fox,
uh-huh.
but a lot of fur on top, like it, almost like a mane.
I could not. Rob, what is he talking about?
A fox, but with like the fur of a mammoth.
Yeah, kind of.
But also, it's a lizard.
No.
Oh,
that's
you're
a
saying this
one.
Is a distinct creature.
Yeah.
You can see where my confusion
yes,
came.
Yes, I understand. Yes, but essentially, what this does is you ride the creature, and it'll follow the scout flies.
Okay.
You can pick up items.
Oh wait, so it just automatically does it?
Yeah. You can't control it, but it like picks up the scent. It'll follow the scout flies to like wherever the first footprint is or whatever, and then you can pick up items and footprints and all that on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
So at first you're just like, it'll stop at each one, but once it knows where the monster is, it'll just beeline to the monster. And while you're on the back of it, you can keep picking stuff up that you like pass by, and also you can use items.
Okay.
So you can basically prep on the way much easier, and you'll get there faster because it's kind of like, you know, it's running faster than you could run, which was nice. It was nice little like, okay, I died to this fucking thing. I'm going to hop on the back of this monster and get all my buffs going, but not waste as much time as I normally would running back.
I think it's a badger.
A badger?
That thing looks like a badger to me.
But it's like too long to be a badger.
I mean, it's
its legs are too... Badgers
well,
are low.
Bullshit.
Badgers are low.
This thing's
None
low.
Of these
it's
are
not
real
that
animals.
Low. This thing is low. I'm going to post it in the podcast chat. Rob, you tell me what this creature is. That I'm uploading slowly on a bad Wi-Fi.
It's not
a fox. That's not the fox's head shape.
No, you're right. It's not the fox's head shape, but it's the fox's like body shape. It's more fox-like in its like slinking around.
That's a badger.
Oh, that is kind of a badger, isn't it?
That's what a badger
That's extremely
looks like.
Badger.
But when it stands up, that front leg is longer. It's like, yeah, they took a badger and a fox and put it together.
And then made it bigger and then put a monster hunter on top of it. And was like, there you go.
There you go.
That's a mount. That's it. You can ride this around. Big bushy tail. Well, when's this out? This is like September?
September.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell myself I'm going to play it.
Yeah.
And then I know I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Rob, you made some gestures in the sky.
I was just curious because... Okay, so you have to have the hot drinks.
Yeah.
But in terms of, does it feel like a meaningfully different biome, or does it feel like, it's a winter skin with, like, wintry creatures, and it's more of the same?
You know, if you pay close enough attention, and you can see where the deep snow is like the mud from the wastes. Right?
Uh-huh.
You can see where, especially now knowing that this is what they do, like, this is always a thing that you could see, like, where the skeletons of the monsters are kind of the same, but they're, like, they give them different skins and different, like, slightly different animations, but you can see where the monster, the deer one is, like, an Anjanath with horns. But I think... It's one of those things where it's like if you pay too much close attention, you can see those things and it could bother you, but like on first glance and like, you know, just like playing through the game, it does feel like, you know, like there's different things happening here. There's plants and stuff that you don't see, like new collectibles.
See, here's what I
want. You don't see more often. Yeah, what?
Monster Hunter goes north.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, you're doing your hunting.
Yeah.
But you're also being hunted more.
Hmm.
Like... I want Monster Hunter to go to the north, and it's like, welcome to the realm of the pursuit predator, where you're off doing your Monster Hunter shit, but in the meantime, something caught your scent, like, from 45 minutes ago,
Jesus.
And it's just been, like, tracking you. That's the shit I want.
I mean, it almost happens sometimes when another monster, like fucking finds you along the way, but... Yeah, no, ultimately it's the like actual new stuff is like the rideable monsters, the new move sets, the new the grapple hook, which is fun. You can grapple straight onto a monster and do like a special move.
Yeah.
What's also fun about that is if you grapple to their head, you have a secondary move that will actually make them just change direction. So you can kind of guide them into things. Yeah. So if you've got a trap on the ground, you can kind of like drive them towards it, things like that. Cool. Which are neat. But yeah.
I'm it really ends up depending on like where I and my friends are at this fall for that game. Right. Like I need to have that social component of like I need to gear up so that I can play with my friends and I want to like push through this stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know if they're changing any of the multiplayer stuff or is it still weird?
I mean, that menu looked the same. Yeah. I don't think it's. Who knows in the full game? Because the way the beta worked, you hit start, you picked a character, like a pre-made character, and then went immediately into the board.
But it's not like, to be clear, like I played enough of it to where I got it, but it would be just nice to immediately have that just work even cleaner.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's like, what I need to get into any video game DLC is to have the barrier of entry to playing it the way I want to play it be nil.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm going to play something new instead.
That's the other thing that it wasn't clear in the beta because you just get a pre-leveled character with base, excuse me, with base equipment and statistics that I don't know where this falls in the like...
Where am I
I stopped two dragons before the end of that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Would I be able, like, I was able to go back in and fight the pickle when that came out, and then I don't know if I would be able to go to this new land yet.
Yeah, we'll see,
hopefully.
Excuse me. I swear Monster Hunter World is not putting me to sleep. Monday is putting me to sleep. It's tough out here. I have coffee, but the coffee is not helping. Rob Zachney, what have you been getting up to? You've been hunting a different type of monster. Zombies? Is that monsters or zombies?
How
or
that
monsters?
Works?
As you hunt them. They're monsters, zombies? But haven't been hunting them.
I thought they were billions.
Yeah. Well, they're billions of monsters, I guess. But of course the real monster is man. And his insatiable appetite for
zombie meat.
Campaign content.
Oh, for campaign content. Wait, okay. So they are billions. A game I always want to call We Are Billions.
It has come out.
What?
It has left early access.
Oh, okay. And along with it.
So this is a. Yes.
I'll let you set it up. This is your baby. I know how much you love this game. Last year, you had nothing but praises to sing to it. I'm so excited to hear you regale me with tales of its 1.0 release and all of the great new features, like its campaign.
Yeah. One of the major things that was going to come with the final version of, or at least the 1.0 version of They Are Billions, was going to be a single-player campaign. And I had always kind of wondered how they're going to square that with the fact that basically it's an RTS tower defense game that is already completely built around a single player experience that you just run again and again and again. And if you want, it's randomized. And if you want to make it harder, you can make it considerably harder. So in a lot of ways, it already has theoretically endless amounts of single player content. Nevertheless, it has a campaign.
So for people, I guess, who didn't see us play this game last year a couple times or who didn't read your earlier writing on it or the writing about this, it is a game where you build a base and defend that base from zombies, from waves of zombies, basically. And it's good, right? Like, the base, that sandbox design works.
Yeah, it is borrowing from some of the most entertaining and accessible aspects of, say, Age of Empires.
Okay.
So it is very much a throwback to that era of base building RTS design. And the whole conceit was that you have to survive for a given period of time. at semi-regular intervals, you have hordes of zombies attack, and they basically try to, the waves get more intense as the scenario goes along, and they begin trying to breach your defenses, and it culminates in a sort of final onslaught from every sides, and that is the final exam for how well you have set up your kill zones, your funnels, etc. And that game is really fun, and it's still fun. It's been enjoyable since the game entered early access. It's still pretty terrific. The problem is that the entire design of that game doesn't lend itself to a single player campaign very well. And the other decision they seem to have made is they're going to give you a lot of single player campaign here. So how do you make just an enormous single player campaign out of their billions? Basically, they just cut the game down drastically and force you to play scenario after scenario after scenario using the most basic units in the game without any of the upgrade options, which means also like none of the resource prioritization decisions or like tactical decisions you have to make in the game about how to set up your defenses. All that's basically thrown out here. And you just build the most basic settlements using those basic units and then just hit like really arbitrary population numbers.
Is that all the missions are? Basically, the scenarios are like, build, you're going to build a town and you got to get the town up to 100 people. And then the next mission is like, you got to get the town up to 200 people, but it's a different map.
That's a lot of them.
Okay.
There's another mission that is very much like, I guess what you call like commando missions or stuff like that from like the Command and Conquer games, where you don't have a base, you have a couple hero units and a couple regular units, and it's still the same mechanics, but now the map art is trying to mimic the interior of a building, right? And so for that, you get special hero units, and you delve into old facilities and try to get a MacGuffin and bring it out. But again, the problem is that's not those missions in general have never been great in RTS games. The entire, oh, here's a couple like super units and you're going to guide them through this really linear path and some story stuff is going to happen and then the mission is going to end. It's very amusement park ride approach design to RTS scenario design.
Well, there's just like a whole type of RTS did this in the 90s, right? Like, I mean, that's just like, I say the 90s because it's when I was playing RTS single player campaigns. But the best ones, I think, felt a little more exciting because what they would do is give you access to certain parts of the tech tree in different missions and expect you to use troops or like units in spectacular ways or interesting ways. And also they never overstayed. The best ones didn't overstay their welcome. That was the other thing, right? It was like, and also they filled it with spectacle, you know, stories that were actually interesting, like characters who I cared about or that I thought were goofy and fun and therefore cared about. So like it's without that stuff, it's hard to know what I would come to the They Are Billions campaign for. There's no FMV in this game.
And that's,
you know what I mean? Like, there's no. Do the units say funny little things when I click on them?
Nope, not really. They have the same really generic barks they've always had. There's another type of mission where you have to defend a small base, but you don't have any production buildings. So basically, it's can you establish a base defense and throw back a horde rush using just a few like strong points and fixed number of defenders.
How
that's actually
micro?
Moderately interesting, but it's annoying.
Yeah.
You're just playing again. It's a cut down version of what you have been coming to this game for. If you've been playing it early access, you're playing a cut down version of what you've been coming to this game for like over a year. And then the way this all dovetails with the campaign structure is as the campaign goes along, each successful mission, you get effectively like requisition points to unlock upgrades and new units, and they just parcel them out in the most glacial possible fashion. So you will do multiple missions, and then it will be like, now you can build the level 2 house. Can you build like farms? No. Therefore, there's no literally no point in building the level 2 house because you can't sustain it.
Right.
So until you get a bunch of the techs for the next tier, none of it works because that's how the game is designed, right? Like all these things interlock. So if you just have a particular unit that is upgraded or a particular building that is from that level of the game, it doesn't really work because none of the other systems that support it are unlocked at the same time. And so you have the option to do this thing, but effectively you can't. And you end up just kind of ignoring it. So it's a really frustrating single-player campaign. And honestly, I guess it was useful. During E3, I was thinking, I was talking about how the Age of Empire gang were kind of bragging about how massive that campaign was going to be.
Yeah.
And playing this reminded me, like, this is actually why I stopped playing Age of Empire campaigns, too. Because it was a lot of stuff like this, where now, this time, you get to use cavalry for the first time. And that was maybe interesting when you were just starting to play the game for the first time, like, in the 90s, and you hadn't played, like, a million RTSs.
Right.
But here, that campaign structure, especially when the sandbox mode already works far, far better, it's just excruciating. It's like, this is what was always kind of loathsome about old school like RTS campaign design. And the problem is we haven't seen a campaign like this really in at least 10 years. Maybe
like the StarCraft 2 stuff has not been like developed, went in a different direction, right? Like that's the most recent major single player campaign focused RTS that I've even dipped my toes in. I don't know if there's been something else since then. But it feels like that stuff was going for spectacle, was going for like really unique, weird stuff that was not just build a base like normal, but with only half your stuff or a quarter of your stuff.
Right. And yeah, so Blizzard found better options for this. And you can almost see some traces of what Blizzard did with StarCraft II in this game. The entire idea of, oh, which unit do you unlock? That was a thing that they did in that campaign. Blizzard, I think, generally imposed more binary choices. Right. So you could have the anti-armor specialist mech, or you could have sort of the swarming new infantry unit that did lots of AoE damage, that kind of stuff. You could make those choices.
Right.
But those were single-player campaign-only units that you wouldn't be able to play with in skirmishes. And then the other thing is they were just more interesting.
Yeah,
right? Well, it wasn't...
Right.
Yeah.
No, I yeah, they were just more interesting. The other thing I just remembered, I'm a fool, of course, I've played like Company of Heroes 2. I've played Company of Heroes and Company of Heroes 2, which have great campaigns compared to the old Age of Empires model. But those are also just such different games as RTSs and completely changed what I wanted from an RTS. Or even Dawn of War. Like, I didn't love Dawn of War 3. But Dawn of War 2 obviously is a game where Relic was like leaning into the idea of there being just like, you're basically playing a hero-based single player, like basically what if MOBA characters.
Very loot chase.
Very loot chase. Very like Diablo with multiple characters and like some tactical cover options if you're playing the characters who aren't just super space marines. So yeah, like coming from those where like they basically turn it into a micro-focused like tactical RPG almost. This doesn't sound like what I want from one of these. And also, like, the AR Billions always felt just kind of weird to me in terms of its, not weird, it was playing on a sort of, like, post-apocalyptica that was interested in, like, but with society fallen, now we've turned back to our baser instincts. But can we bring back civilization, us, the proud few who understand what society really is? It's like when I watch the trailer for this and it's just Immortan Joe, but in a suit, like being like, I am your savior. I don't know that that game is going to, I mean, you can tell me, but like, I don't know that game is going to tell me a story I'm particularly interested in either. He shrugged.
I mean, clearly the guy sucks.
Yeah,
like, the
yeah.
game knows he sucks and is discussing that. But at the same time, I don't know how they're going. I don't know how they're going to resolve that tension. I talked about this a little bit in my write-up.
Yeah.
All the mechanics reinforce that theme. Yeah. So how are you going to subvert or critique it from within that game design? That seems like a tall order. The other thing is, like, I'm sure there's a turn at some point in the game, But there's no way I'm going to get to that point. There's no way I'm going to continue playing this campaign to get to the part where it's revealed this guy sucks and actually reestablishing his empire, expanding his empire, isn't the thing you should be doing. So, like, I feel that criticism, and particularly in that, I don't know, the whole, like, zombie motif has gotten weirder as well, because it speaks to a certain apocalyptic worldview that is sort of alive, like vital in the world right now, that is sort of like alive and growing in power and influence in the world. And so, like, in terms of as a game design, I can still have fun with that stuff, but it is one of those things where you're looking at, you know, barely concealed subtext. It's practically text about, you know, the world beyond the walls and the sort of like mindless horrors that are trying to break in and get what you have. That is harder to enjoy uncritically. I think this game does, like, it seems like its direction is going to be the people who really push those messages are probably not worth trusting, but the design is not going to get me to that point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a bummer. We should take a break and hopefully talk about games that were not as, you know, defeated by and depressed with their output. In fact, I actually, Kato, you're playing Bloodstained, which has gotten some, like, really positive responses, which is not what I expected. So maybe a happy... Mm. Okay, well, maybe... Fuck. God damn it. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back. Kato.
Hi.
Bloodstained Ritual of the Night?
Yes.
Curse of the Moon?
No.
Aria of Sorrow?
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Is it Ritual of the Night? It is Ritual. It's wait, no. Was Ritual of the Night was that the... Yeah, Ritual of the Night.
Ritual of the Night.
What was the one that was sense. The, like, retro one? Curse of the Moon.
Okay.
Curse of the Moon.
The small, that was the, yeah, right, the 8-bit one they released. Yeah. Yeah, so Bloodstained. I had a lot of trouble at the very beginning of this game because it feels very much like those old Castlevanias
in a way that... I mean, I guess to set it up, it is a Koji Igarashi-led Castlevania-esque, like Symphony of the Night-esque, or like Iga's Game Boy and DS releases.
I've heard
releases.
People who have more experience with those games than me say it's Symphony of the Night 2.
Yeah, like, no, that's what it looks like, exactly.
And so the last game that was similar to this that I played was Hollow Knight.
Okay.
Right? So part of the opening hours, like, part of the issue I've been having is just that it feels sluggish. Mm. You don't have any of the movement stuff that you will eventually unlock.
Yeah, but even then,
even the way that in Hollow Knight you can move around that world and, like, bounce off things with the knife, with the, like, directional attacking, even, right? Like, this is not that. Yeah. And so it felt slow and kind of simple in a way that I was like, okay, there has to be something more here. And there is. It, like, takes a little bit to get going, but you start to unlock these magic attacks called shards, that one of them is a directional attack, and it can be basically, depending on what shard you have equipped, it's a different magic spell, and they're all kind of, they've all been kind of pretty different. One of them is like there's a couple summons, you know?
Yeah.
There's a couple that are like very short range but do a lot of damage. There's a couple that are like...
You basically have like five like equipment slots, right?
Right.
And the things that you put in there, are those all things you get from enemies?
Yes.
So that's the thing. That's the thing that's like sort of Aria of Sorrow, which is one of Iga's Game Boy... Aria of Sorrow was a
DS one?
Was a GBA.
Oh, okay.
I think GBA because the DS ones were... there was a D and an S in it. Castlevania.
Dusk of something?
No.
No?
No.
Dawn of...
Portrait of Ruin, but that one's not the... Dawn of Sorrow.
Sorrow.
Yes.
Okay,
Dawn
yeah,
of Sorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Dawn of Sorrow was the sequel to Aria.
Right. Okay.
To Aria of Sorrow. And in those, the lead character was able to, like, kill enemies, and then there's a random chance that they would drop, like... a thing that gave you a spell, basically.
Right.
But in this, it seems like that's like a lot of your abilities
yes.
go to that. You have a bunch of different slots, right?
Yeah, you have a bunch of different slots. And one of them is just going to be like one-off attack.
Right.
One of them is directional, so you can use the right stick to point it in any direction. One of them is a passive, which is just going to upgrade some stat or another. The one I currently have is like... all swords that I use are better.
Cool.
What is the other? There's another one called Manipulative that I don't think I actually have unlocked yet. I've only played like 3.5 hours.
Okay.
I still haven't unlocked like every, like I have all the slots, like you can see them, but I don't have a shard for each one.
Right.
Yet. At first, you only have like a handful of weapons, and it feels like they all attack like slow in a way that doesn't feel interesting. Like, but as you move on, like after the first couple hours, you start to find better weapons, and I started to realize that there were certain things you could do, like if you attack midair. Just before you land, mm-hmm. you can throw out a second attack immediately after, like weird little like animation cancellation tricks that seem to be like purposeful in a way. Like they feel like this was designed this way so that like you would have ways of dealing more damage faster, because otherwise it feels like every animation is just like very
so slow.
I mean, and like kind of purposeful.
A lot of people... I mean, not a lot of people, but some people, including me.
Yeah.
When Dark Souls blew up, one of the things I kept thinking about with Dark Souls, even before Bloodborne came out, was like, to some degree, those games felt like the extension of this era of Castlevania design, including that style of like deliberate combat, where if you swung your fucking weapon, it took a while to recover. There's
big recovery frames.
And so that was like... a purposeful design decision that does feel so distinct from something like Hollow Knight, which is all about like quickness and agility and like quick decision making. Whereas this was like, not that there isn't decision making in these games.
You're making it quick, but then you're committed once you hit that button.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a thing that I'm having. I think I'm up to the first, like, I would consider it probably a full on boss that I've had a lot of trouble with.
Right.
Because it's, I'm still getting used to I still want it to be Hollow Knight, where you can, like, you know, bounce off people's heads and things like that.
It is not
and
that.
I'm like trying to untrain myself. Like, jumping over them is not always going to work because the swing.
They will move up sometimes or throw an axe or like whatever. Yeah, totally.
It's just like being in the air is not as safe as it felt like in other games.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I'm starting to like really get into it. Like I'm finding the differences in the different spells that you can equip more interesting than most of the weapons so far. But also I've been finding more and more interesting weapons. It just feels like it's doling out like the more interesting stuff a little bit slower than I would have had to, like, if like this was like a thing I tried at a friend's home, I would have been like, it's not for me, and like moved on.
But now that you're
like, I had it, I've seen more of it. Like, I think I'm probably gonna see it through because it's starting to get really neat. It's the art style has me like, I Like, yeah. Parts of it.
Yeah.
Parts of it look really weird.
Yeah. It does. You know what? I'd rather it look weird than just like, yeah, it looks good. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
But it is really, I would have really preferred like a cool, like looking at Curse of the Moon. Okay, here's my problem. Castlevania, yeah. Circle of the Moon was a Castlevania game.
Right.
Bloodstained Curse of the Moon was the 2D one. I loved how that looked. That looked great. And I wouldn't like this. I would love this to look more like Symphony of the Night or like that era of Castlevania game. But like there is something so strange about the aesthetic of this game. And I don't.
It's because it feels like there's like three different aesthetics.
Yes.
One of them's for the enemies, one of them's for the backgrounds, and one of them's for your character. In a way that's like not like, oh, they're trying to make the character pop. It's more like it feels like they were designed differently and are lit differently.
Feel like they are lit differently. I'm watching someone actually just go in and out of one room right now and kill this one weird like Lion Knight enemy again because they're trying to grind out that magic spell from
Right.
And everything in all of these places just looks completely different. Like the characters have a very like 3D anime inspired aesthetic.
Yeah.
Whereas the spaces just feel like high quality renders.
Yeah.
.com. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
and this is after an art pass. They have like a video on their Steam page that's like, look, we're making the art better. And like the background used to look muddier. It was even worse. So I like this of the two options, but I'm getting over it.
Yeah.
But it was definitely when I started, I was like, this game doesn't look great. Why is everything weird? Like, it feels like they could have done a better job at like not having to make a bunch of models if they had done it in 2D, and it would have looked better because it hasn't come into play like it being 3D
right
hasn't come into play in a way that has been particularly interesting.
I've seen some stuff where they do like the angle of the camera changes as you move from one place to another, but like I don't care, none of these castles
the map is still two dimensional.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, like ultimately you're still going left and right.
Totally.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, wow, we're really just not killing it today in terms of games we're super excited about.
Yeah.
I feel like Summer Lull. That's a thing. Rob, can you save us with Steel Division 2, or are you also not thrilled with Steel Division 2?
My feeling about that is complicated right now. Steel Division 2 is interesting because they had labor issues throughout the production of this game. They had a strike last year, at Yuzen Systems. And then at the start of this year, multiple people were dismissed, and union representatives, claimed that they were retaliatory firings. And I actually spoke to a couple people who were part of the labor action there. And it is funny to me. One, it was just entertaining sort of the naked contempt they have for the management at Yuzen. But it was also striking the degree to which they discussed how many people who were dismissed were involved with technical tasks. And one of the constant recurring friction points was sort of a disconnect between technical staff and then studio management and, how reasonable certain ideas or requests are and what will be required for successful implementation. And when I play this game, it sure feels like a lot of ideas that were sort of thrown in there in a jumble, and they're exciting ideas, but the execution is like definitely a bit lacking. And in some places it's very lacking. This isn't entirely new. This has always been something with Yuzen games. They've always been, ever since they stopped being kind of a AAA RTS maker, cause they made a game called Ruse with, Ubisoft
years ago.
Yeah. It was a great game. And so they showed they can operate at a really high level of like production quality, but those days are sort of long gone. And this game, by all accounts, was kind of finished under a skeleton crew.
Yeah.
And it sort of bears traces of that. It feels a lot more like an Eastern Front expansion to Steel Division 1 rather than an entirely like cohesive new game. That said, like there are things it does well with sort of evoking Eastern Front combat.
Right.
The campaign structure is something I'm digging into a lot more. They made some really odd decisions with that. It's a, like the so what they tried to do here, Steel Division 1 had a linear campaign where you go through various missions for different side for like different units that were fighting in Normandy. Here they tried a dynamic campaign where you're taking scenarios of combat in 1944 on the Eastern Front, and you are moving sort of macro level units around. You're moving like Soviet Guards tank regiments and motorized infantry divisions around. And depending on who's fighting where, you have different matches of forces in the tactical battles. Having played around with it a little bit, it's kind of cool, but it also feels nothing like the main game in ways that are interesting, but also kind of frustrating. So it's almost like your game knowledge from having played Steel Division 1 or playing multiplayer a lot doesn't translate to the campaign. The campaign functions very differently, which is both interesting, but also kind of exasperating because a bit like They Are Billions, there's parts of this game that are kind of meant to fit together in certain ways as an RTS game. And when you're playing scenarios that are all about, well, in this one, you've got tons of tanks and a lot of air support, but no recon infantry and, you know, issues like that. Parts of the game just stop functioning as well. And part of war game design is creating these odd, kind of awkward mismatches where you kind of have to work around limitations in your force structure. But it does end up feeling like I don't fully know if this campaign is a good version of Steel Division is kind of the weird thing. I don't know. I'm still working through my feelings about it. It's a game that I think has been compromised in a lot of ways. And honestly, like to an extent, I feel compromised by playing it, right? Knowing that there are these labor issues in the background. When I spoke to people who were involved in the strike, I sort of asked, what would you prefer people do with a game like this? You know, do you want people not to buy it? Do you like what's your feeling about that?
Yeah. Go ahead.
And their response was, yeah, fuck them. Don't buy it.
Right. Right. Which is like which is actually distinct, I think, from a lot of that response that we got. We heard from people who were interviewed last year around some labor issues and games in the States where their response was like, well, you know, in the end, it doesn't really help our situation if people don't. So, you know, there is something very interesting about the cultural difference there.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that is just cultural or also, like, they were sort of at pains to point out that in their view, this was one of the friction points between the strikers and activists and Yuge and management, is that it was kind of a fuck you pay me situation where Yuge and were kind of pleading poverty and, oh, we couldn't possibly afford to pay people. Sort of the mandatory rates that people are owed under French employment law for positions like this. And when they were pointed out that they appeared to be in breach a lot of these regulations, their response was to engage in like kind of really long fact-finding missions about like very, very Captain Renault. You know, I'm shocked to find that people are not being paid in accordance with labor law type reactions. And we are going to research conditions at the studio to get to the bottom of this. And one of the points of friction was that all rang pretty hollow to at least some of the strikers because the financials of the studio, as far as like getting people paid those amounts of money, were pretty good. Their view was this is not a studio that is depending on Steel Division 2 to blow up to keep the lights
on.
They're
not looking for a smash hit here. Just to make they are. I'm sure they are looking for a smash hit here, but not to exactly. They're not like up against the wall in that way financially.
Yeah, so that was at least the position of some of the people who have been dismissed from the studio or have left the studio, who their feeling is buying the game doesn't help workers who are still there. not buying it is probably not going to put people out of a job. And so, you know, their view was kind of the, you know, the brothers who run the studio and the rest of their management team don't really deserve to not be held to account for stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And so if people are like, if people are on the fence about this game over sort of the labor conditions in which it was made, you know, at least a few of the people who were dismissed in all this would encourage you to listen to that feeling, to, by all means, feel uneasy about it.
You know, I feel like that is a conversation that we're going to be having more and more as organization continues to happen across the globe in this industry. And I'm just like happy that people are out there speaking their minds and being like, hey, here is what we would like, because we so rarely actually get that. What we normally get is like prepackaged and often kind of this often even comes from organizers because they feel like they have to play ball. Do you know what I mean? We so rarely get the like salt the earth like response because because part of being in that organizational position is that like we have to play nice at least a little bit. So I'm just curious. It's going to be so curious to see what the language starts to look like from different guilds and unions. Because again, France is such a different situation than what we have in the States. Like there are such stronger labor laws in place that like then give those sorts of guilds and unions a certain extra leverage to play with that are that it just like not on the table for people in the States who are organizing right now. So we'll see. Patrick's not here at all. Cotto, you I was thinking of Harry Potter, you know, Potter. So Potter, Patrick.
Harry Potter.
I know you played that. I feel like we should talk about that on Friday. Maybe give another couple days to we got a story coming in on that game, so we'll all be immersed in the world of Harry Potter. Wizards United.
Yes.
Wizards United is a bad name.
It's weird.
I don't love it. So
great football club.
Yeah, that is exactly what it sounds
you.
Like. Yeah, with you. Yeah, exactly. We'll be back on Friday to talk about that. We'll be back on Friday to talk about The Sinking City, which we actually have Danielle in the studio right now. So you may have heard her laughing moments ago. But we can't talk about The Sinking City today. A game I did play some of, the game that you played a bunch of.
Yes.
But we can't talk about it today. So we're going to record that for you to listen to on Friday. What else are we going to have on Friday? What else is popping this week? I'll probably have played some more Judgment, so I'll be able to talk about that.
Yeah.
I'll have a shout-out.
You'll have a shout-out for Friday?
For Duck Season.
Huh? Duck Season, the previously VR game.
Yeah.
So you'll take a look at that. And then we'll see what else there is. Also coming this week, our first, or I guess our second technically, episode of Waypoints focused on Evangelion, which is now available on Netflix. You may have seen some opening salvos of discourse over the weekend, which we'll get into at least a little bit. We'll be recording that later this week. So if you have questions about only the first 7 episodes of Ava, not anything after that, because this crew has not seen it except for me and Kato, right?
Yeah.
So don't send spoilers. You'll be done. We'll be done with you. Like, for real. We'll never see your words again.
Bye.
I'll make sure people see it that way. So, yeah, and that'll be it. So, if you have questions for those first 7 episodes, you can send those in to gamingadvice.com. Or if you have questions about video games, not about The Sinking City. I mean, I guess you could write in questions about The Sinking City, but we will not have seen it before we record this segment on The Sinking City that is going to go into Friday's podcast.
Yeah.
Shout outs as always to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Shout outs as always to everyone who's following our Twitter, twitter.com/waypoint. Facebook.com/waypointvice. Shout outs to Rob. You can find Rob on Twitter at RobZachney. Kato at @A_Kato_appears. Find me on Twitter at @Austin_Walker. We'll be back on Friday for more. I feel like I'm skipping something, but I'm not.
Oh.
Since you're here, Danielle, you want to help us out?
At Danielle Arai. And also, see, I had to throw that.
Yeah, no, please.
Also, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Okay.
Should do a clap.
Can clap.
Mm-hmm.
Can clap when it's time.
I gotta visit the place.
Mm-hmm.
I must go to the time.
The clapping place. You got any Time. All right, I'm there.
All right, let's do top of the minute. Okay.
Claps.
Felt good.
Claps, claps, claps.
All right, 243, Kato?
Yeah. Okay. It's that thing.
What is?
It's sequential. Oh, that's good.
It's sequential.
It's not sequential. Yeah, it's got all the numbers in there.
243, yeah. Right?
No, but 3 goes before 4.
Oh, wow.
I did this. That's the thing. I started there and then...
All right.
They're all the numbers are there. It's just not in the right order.
It's not, yeah, it doesn't. We'll have another 2 more from now. No, 2 more from now will be 2, 4, 5. That's still not.
No.
We gotta get to 3, 4, 5 for that to happen again.
Yeah.
Well, that ain't happening. I don't know about all that. That's a lot. All right.